Welcome to What the Tech, the podcast series brought to you by ProServeIT. In this episode, you're in for a treat as we explore the world of Windows 365, a cloud-based service offering virtual desktops. Discover how it can revolutionize your workspace, enhance security, and provide flexibility for your organization. Stay tuned as we uncover the essentials of Windows 365, its features, and how it can benefit your business. Buckle up, tech enthusiasts, as we dive into the exciting realm of cloud-based desktop solutions.
Let's get into today's session. So today we're going to be talking about Windows 365 Cloud PC for the hybrid workplace. My name is Bill Kastner. I'm an Azure Solutions Architect with ProServeIT, and I'll be your presenter today. From an agenda perspective, we've got a lot going on. So there's a whole lot of topics we're going to talk through, but I think at the end of this, we should hopefully have a pretty good sense of what Windows 365 is and what it means and how we're going to go about configuring that. So let's jump right into it. So what is Windows 365? Windows 365 is Microsoft's cloud-based cloud PC that's designed really to be more of a turnkey solution. Unlike some other VDI style solutions, things like Azure Virtual Desktop or Remote Desktop Services or Xen or Horizon, this is really focused on providing personal, simple, secure desktops. Right. So with Windows 365, it's designed as a one-to-one desktop scenario. So we're not stacking multiple users on an individual host. Every person gets their own personalized desktop. The benefit being all of your applications, all your content and settings, everything that is unique to you is contained in that desktop. All the resources associated with a desktop are specific to you. And the nice thing is because it is a dedicated persistent desktop, if you're working in one location, you shut down, you start up again on another device, another location, you're logging back into that existing session. You're picking up exactly where you left off. All the same applications are open. Your cursor is in exactly the same place it was before you shut down. From a power perspective, it's a very scalable solution. So it is primarily focused around Windows 11. We do still support Windows 10 as well, but today most of the focus is really around that Windows 11 experience. But we have the ability to scale these desktops based off of individual user needs. So depending on what that individual user does on a day-by-day basis, we can tailor that desktop experience to best meet their specific requirements. From a simplicity standpoint, we have a couple of different ways in which we manage Windows 365. So one, if you are an Intune or Microsoft Endpoint Manager customer, this natively rolls into that and can be managed the same as any other desktop in your organization. If you are not using Endpoint Manager and sit more on the SMB side, we do have the Windows 365 portal, which can be used both for the administration side, as well as for the actual users themselves to be able to interact with their desktop. And then lastly, this is built as a secure solution, right? So all those security benefits that we had baked into Windows 11 when launched, all those are natively available to us as well. So we can take advantage of all those additional benefits that we've seen. So if we look at Windows 365's benefits in a snapshot, first, we're looking at content wherever you go. Like I said, as long as you have an internet connection, no matter what device you're sitting in front of, whether it's a Windows machine, Mac, iOS, Android, whatever that flavor happens to be, your content is always going to be available to you. Wow. Consistent settings across devices. As I mentioned, we have clients for a wide range of device types. The intent is to provide a consistent experience across the board. So regardless of what device you happen to sit in front of, it should have that familiar look and feel. Scalable storage. When we first provision a Windows 365 cloud PC, we do have a defined storage amount, but we can scale that based off of what that user needs. So if the user is evolving, there's an additional effort required by that user, additional workloads, we can scale that storage up to meet that requirement along with CPU and memory. Huge options for different users. So this is one of the real benefits. Unlike a traditional VDI solution where, again, we're looking at multi-session, again, think remote desktop services or Azure Virtual Desktop for those who might be familiar. One of the benefits of those solutions is the ability to stack multiple users on a given piece of hardware. The downside is all of those users are going to have the same resources associated with them. Windows 365, because it is a personalized desktop, you can tailor each desktop to a specific user's needs. So if you have users who are more CPU intensive or more memory intensive or have higher disk requirements, we can tailor that virtual desktop or cloud PC to a specific user. Applications, whether through the portal, whether through My Applications website, whether through the desktop itself, all of our applications are just available there for us when we need them. And then lastly, unified security and identity management. So Windows 365 is really built around the whole Azure AD identity solution We do have integration points into Active Directory as well. Because we're leveraging the same credentials and the same security model that we have for Microsoft 365, all those security components that we've already put in place to support existing infrastructure just naturally flow through and are supported by our Windows 365 Cloud PCs as well. When we talk about Windows 365, we actually have two different flavors to choose from. So we have Windows 365 Business and Enterprise. Windows 365 Business is designed for SMB markets, right? So typically it's geared for organizations that are sub 300 users. It has a simple onboarding and administration process through that Windows 365.microsoft.com portal. There are no licensing prerequisites. So again, you buy your license for Windows 365 Business and you're off to the races. It's built around, again, that Azure AD Join model. So the assumption with this is we're not tying back into on-prem infrastructure. We're a cloud-focused organization. And so we're going to leverage our Azure AD credentials, the same as we do for Office 365, in order to authenticate against our desktop. And then from a management perspective, we're typically dealing with users on an individual basis. On the other side of the fence, we have Windows 365 Business, Enterprise, excuse me. So Windows 365 Enterprise, a couple of the key differences is, again, it is designed to work with Microsoft Endpoint Manager or Intune. We tend to call it Endpoint Manager now, but many are familiar with those as Intune. So I'll tend to try to use both where possible. But all the deployment, all the management capabilities are managed through the Endpoint Manager portal. There are some additional licensing requirements. So we do need to be licensed again for Windows 10 or 11 Enterprise. We do need that Endpoint Manager license, as well as Azure Active Directory P1. Many customers, given the Windows 365 licensing model, have a lot of this existing. But for those who might be new to the Microsoft Cloud ecosystem, there are going to be some additional licenses that may be required. With Enterprise, we have the ability to either Azure AD Join or hybrid Azure AD Join, where we're tying in our existing Active Directory environment as well. Typically, we manage the Enterprise SKUs through groups. So we can do group assignments, apply policies to groups and such, rather than working on individual users. We have the ability to leverage both gallery and customer provided images. So gallery images are provided by Microsoft. There's a de facto standard that we see for most virtual desktop environments. That's what is used for Windows 365 Business. But for those organizations that do have custom images that they use today to across their organization, those can be injected into the Windows 365 platforms and be used as the foundation to build into your Windows 365 Enterprise desktops as well. Because we tie into Endpoint Manager, we have access to things like Endpoint Analytics. And so we get a whole lot of rich reporting and actionable insights. And being an enterprise SKU, there are no restrictions, obviously, on the number of users that we can support. Looking at a feature breakout, so as you can see, so the top couple are really focused on business, the bottom majority are focused on enterprise. But folks are looking at a 365 Business initially. So we have click-to-provision from that windows365.microsoft.com website. So it's very easy. You log into the website. Users are assigned the license. You provision the desktop and away you go. There's no domain setup. Because we're leveraging Azure Active Directory in this scenario, there's no tie-ins or requirements for any sort of Active Directory environment, which is becoming more and more prevalent across customer organizations. There is some self-service components for that user. So the user themselves can log into that Windows 365 site. They can reboot or reset the desktop as necessary to provide basic troubleshooting issues. Again, being a Microsoft product, we all know a reboot can solve an awful lot of problems. So having the user have the ability to do that themselves can help us reduce overall service tickets and such that we're likely to see and let users ideally address some of their issues. And then we have cloud saves. So there is Azure storage that's associated with the VM itself. And then often we will typically see OneDrive for Business tied in as well. If we move to the enterprise SKUs, again, we have that cloud save. We do have basic Azure storage and then OneDrive for Business. But I will say, if you're not using OneDrive for Business today, that is definitely a strong recommendation. It makes data management a whole lot easier, syncing data, backing up data, ransomware protection and such, huge benefits to OneDrive for Business. And so this is typically integrated as part of an overall solution for Windows 365's users. We have other benefits like self-serve upgrades and universal prints, partner programmatic enablement, the ability again to use custom images, image management, so where we can store, replicate, and deploy images. We can leverage Endpoint Manager, policy-driven provisioning, management, and guided scenarios. And so again, all our administration, all of our management, all of our policy creation activities happen inside of Endpoint Manager with Windows 365 Enterprise. Endpoint Analytics gives us a ton of insight into what's happening from an end user perspective, gives us both reporting and monitoring capabilities, helps us proactively address end user issues or gives us great insights when working with an issue with a user to troubleshoot issues. We also have service health and operational health alerts. We have the ability to tie back into on-premise networks. So again, your traditional Active Directory and traditional server-based environments. And then we have advanced endpoint manager, troubleshooting and device management capabilities as well. So talking about provisioning. So if we start on the right-hand side, that is our Azure AD only model. So, you know, with the enterprise SKUs, we'd be doing it through the endpoint manager admin portal. With our SMB SKUs, we would be looking at the Windows 365 portal itself. But all we require is that and then our credentials. So typically your Azure AD credential, that's all that's really required from a user perspective. If we're taking a broader picture, looking at sort of that hybrid Azure AD join, there are additional elements that are going to be required. So for us to tie back into existing on-prem infrastructure, we do need an Azure subscription. So the way it works, and we'll delve into this a little bit later in session, is while the virtual Windows 365 Cloud PC sits on a Microsoft hosted tenant, we tie back into a customer-facing tenant to access server resources in Azure, but then also use that as a bridge to access back to our on-prem environment as well. It is worth noting or recommended that all the associated Azure resources be in the same geographic region as Windows 365's. And then if we don't already have that in place, we do need to configure Azure, hybrid Azure AD join. Flipping back over to the right from a required credentials perspective, again, as we get into more advanced solution sets, things like endpoint manager and such, we will need to worry about other service accounts, the Intune service admin, Azure subscription owner for hybrid and such as well. So there might be some additional required credentials based on the given scenario that you're working with. From an identity perspective, so Azure AD Join is our preferred model moving forward, right? As I mentioned, more and more customers are looking at ways of getting rid of Active Directory and reducing dependency on traditional server-based infrastructure. And so being able to cloud join or Azure AD Join makes life immensely simple. So if you are in a world where you are not focused on that Active Directory anymore, you've moved to that cloud-first model with an Azure AD Join scenario, there's no configuration required. If you are in that hybrid state where you still have dependencies on an Active Directory environment, and we need to look at a hybrid Azure AD Join model, we will need to look at Azure AD Connect and be configured to sync those identities so that Microsoft's cloud services understand that a given Active Directory user is matched to a given Azure Active Directory user, and that it understands that those are the same identities just being stored in different locations. For most customers who are already running Office or Microsoft 365, and leveraging Active Directory integration, Azure AD Connect is already in place, and so there's likely no additional configuration required here. But if you are new to Microsoft's cloud ecosystem and stepping into Windows 365, want to leverage that hybrid configuration, this will be a requirement for you. Networking requirements. So again, if we're in a cloud-only model, this doesn't really apply. If we are looking at tying back into our existing infrastructure, so again, our Active Directory or server-based infrastructure, there are a couple of components that we need to take into account. So we do need that Azure subscription, or sorry, the Azure tenant that we spoke about. We'll need to create a subscription inside of that. And then we need to create a virtual network that our Windows 365 desktops can use. Inside of that virtual network, we're also going to need to configure DNS, right? So DNS is what's going to allow this desktop to be able to resolve things like computer names, Active Directory, domain services and records and such. So when we build that virtual network, we do need to have the right DNS service configured, so our desktops know how to route and how to communicate effectively with the different servers that we have, either in Azure or on-premise. As noted, we need Azure AD Connect in that hybrid state to be able to sync our identities so that Active Directory and Azure Active Directory understand that it's a single user that we're dealing with. And in a hybrid state, the cloud PCs are actually Active Directory joined. So even though they're hosted in Microsoft Azure tenant that's independent of your own, you are actually joining that workstation to your existing Active Directory. And so when users authenticate, they're actually logging into a domain joined PC in that scenario. When we look at how to bridge Azure and on-prem infrastructure, we have a couple different methods available to us. So the first is ExpressRoute. So this is a dedicated network through your service provider. Think of it like MPLS for those who might have that in play. It's basically extending your personal network to include the Azure data center as well. Benefits there being, because it's a dedicated connection, you have dedicated bandwidths between you and Azure, which could be hugely beneficial given on based on the types of applications such that you're running or the workloads that are required. There are obviously are cost considerations to that though. Our other option is site-to-site VPN, which is what the majority of our customers tend to use. So it is a little more limited from a bandwidth perspective compared to ExpressRoute. You're basically traversing the internet, not a dedicated private connection. So there's a little more variability there, but it's a far more cost-effective solution. Again, for those customers who might already have Azure in play, chances are whatever environment you're looking at or however you want to tie back into your on-prem has already been done. But this is definitely a consideration for those who might be looking at stepping into Microsoft's cloud ecosystem for the first time and looking to build all that surrounding infrastructure that's required. Bandwidth costs. So with Azure, and this is true for Azure in general, not just anything Windows 365 related, you have data coming in and data going out of Azure. So data going in or ingress data, there's never a charge for. Egress data or data leaving the Azure data center does have an associated cost. So you can see the first 5 gigs per month is free. As we start to use more and more data above that, then there is some marginal cost associated with that data usage for outbound data. This is pricing in USD just for reference. Again, it's fairly nominal. Usually this is not a real deal breaker for most organizations. This often works out to be a very small percentage of the overall cost of a given solution, but it is worth noting that there is some actual cost associated with egress or exporting data. For the Windows 365's PC itself, because it is a Microsoft-hosted data center, we're not really paying egress or outbound data cost. Instead, we have limits that are defined for us. And these limits are going to be based off of the VM or cloud PC configuration. So we basically take a look at what the memory configuration or RAM configuration of that VM is, and that's going to dictate how much outbound data allowance we have per month. You can see for the 2 gig VM, which is going to be very small and very lightly used most likely, we have 12 gig of outbound data, which is typically more than sufficient, at least in very rare scenarios. But in the event that you did find that you did have additional requirements for outbound data traffic, really the only consideration or only thing you need to do is bump the RAM on that VM from 2 gigs to 4 gigs, for example, increases your outbound data allowance from 12 to 20 gig. This is something that's typically not going to come for most customers. It is important to be aware of this as a possibility, as once you've exceeded that limit, there can be some restrictions in place where you might not be able to actually use outbound traffic. Again, these limits are rather high. So for most day-to-day operations, for most user types, this is never going to be a consideration. But if you are running an application that pushes out a lot of external data for whatever reason, this is definitely something to be aware of. Network requirements. So we touched on this a little bit earlier. So the Azure Virtual Network that we built inside of our Azure subscription or inside of our Azure tenant, we do need to be able to resolve DNS for our Active Directory environment. So when we build that virtual network, we do want to ensure that we're actually putting the DNS servers of our domain controllers in place so that any of the virtual machines or Windows 365 cloud PCs that are associated with this virtual network understand how to effectively communicate with our on-prem infrastructure. Looking at requirements again, get Azure AD joined. Because we are a cloud-only organization in this model, we're not tied back into on-prem Active Directory environments or Azure Active Directory environments, as it may be. There's no configuration required. In a hybrid scenario, we do need to ensure that, again, we have our Azure tenant, have our subscription within, create our virtual network, and then have that DNS configured to allow the correct routing of information. There are going to be a number of service URLs that are going to be in use. Specifically, this is focused around when you are in an Azure environment, that hybrid state where we need to be able to tie back into your environment. Microsoft does have a published list of all the different URLs that are required. This is important as we configure things like firewalls and stuff to make sure that we have everything open that's going to be required in order to support this. But these are published details from Microsoft, very easy to find, but definitely consideration as we build out our Windows 365 solutions. Licenses. So Windows 365 licenses, they're treated the same as any other Microsoft Cloud license. So whether it's a Windows 10 or 11 license, whether it's an Endpoint Manager license, whether it's an Office 365 license, the management and administration is handled the same way. So typically you're going to log into your Microsoft 365 Admin Center portal, go to active users, select that user, and then assign the appropriate license. So as you can see in the screenshot there, you have a couple different Windows 365 VM types available. They denote the number of CPU cores, the amount of memory, and the amount of storage on a given VM or cloud PC. It's just a matter of picking the one that's right for that individual user. but these get treated the exact same as it would through as with like some within the Office 365 or Microsoft 365 license. We typically do see that. Yes.
Hey, we do have a question in the chat.
Absolutely.
Hey, Dave is asking, we have volunteers who do not have individual logins, but do share info, such as website bookmarks, files and folders, etc. If I created a volunteer Windows 365 desktop, how many users could log into that desktop at one time?
One. It is one to one. So you could run in a shared model, but think of it just like a traditional laptop or desktop in front of that user, because it sends you what it is. It's a cloud version, but it behaves exactly the same. So it's going to be one to one. So if you have multiple volunteers that work during the same business hours that need access, they would all need an individual desktop. If you have volunteers that maybe run shifts over a 24/7 period where maybe you have 3 or 4 or 5 people over the course of a week that share a desktop, that could be supported with a common desktop. But anything where we're going to have multiple users, you're going to need individual desktops. The other option would be Azure Virtual Desktop, which we don't really delve into here. I do touch on very briefly at the end, but that's more of your multi-session scenario. So Azure Virtual Desktop is much more similar to remote desktop services, for example, where you can have a single host and you can stack multiple users on that desktop. And that might be a better fit for what you're trying to do, unless you want users to have each their own individual personalized desktop. We do include contact information at the end. So if you, Dave, if you want to talk through this in more detail in an individual call or sort of one-on-one, happy to have that conversation with you and figure out based off of your scenario, what might be the best fit for you. Last thing to note on this slide, and sorry, Dave, hope that at least gives you a preliminary answer to your question. And like I said, happy to chat further. Last thing to note on this slide. So again, we typically focus on the Microsoft 365 Admin Center for this type of management, but we do also have the ability to do it either through the Azure portal or through the Azure AD group assignment for bulk scenarios. And so again, rather than citing individual users, we can leverage that on a group basis, which makes life a little bit easier. Cloud PC resize. So one of the nice things that has been introduced with Windows 365 is the scalability option. So we have the ability, specifically this is focused around Windows 365 Enterprise, not business. That's important to point out. And we also need to worry about individual assignments, not group assignments at this point, although that will could change down the road. But if we do find that a user is constrained, maybe they're having CPU spikes or they're having memory spikes or they're running out of storage, it's very easy to resize that PC. So again, through Endpoint Manager, we're going to go into devices, cloud PC, and then we're going to go and make the changes that you can see on the screen here, where maybe we still are happy with our 2 processors, but where we had 4 gigs historically, we want to bump that to 8. And so with a couple clicks, we can do that. It's going to force a restart of the actual endpoint itself. So it's important the user knows it's coming. But with a simple reboot, we come back up with that 8 gigs of memory versus 4, and the user can log back in and resume session and such. Connecting to a network. So in a hybrid Azure AD join model, we do need to have that connection. We've talked about some of this in some of the earlier slides. We obviously need line of sight into our Active Directory domain services for hybrid AD join. We're simply going to go through and create our connection. So our on-premises network connection tab, create, we're going to Azure AD join. If we want to just do cloud, otherwise we'll select hybrid AD join, which we'll touch on. Enter the network credentials. If we're doing a hybrid join, we need to enter our Active Directory domain services. There's too many 2 and 3 letter acronyms here. Active Directory domain services required information to allow Endpoint Manager and the device itself to understand where the domain controllers are and how to access them. Your Azure AD scenario, we still create a connection. We just don't need to worry about specifying what the on-prem Active Directory environment is going to be. So we're still going to create our connection. We're going to select Azure AD join. That one's correct here rather than the last one, which should have said hybrid. Enter network details. But because of that, in an Azure AD join model, we're not tied into Active Directory. We don't need to provide any of that information. Network health check. So this is probably one of my favorite components that's been introduced with Windows 365. As you go through your provisioning process, there is this health check service that runs that gives you an understanding of where you are within that provisioning process and where a failure may have occurred. So obviously you want to see green check marks top to bottom, letting you know that everything was successful and that desktop has been provisioned correctly. But in the event that there is an issue, this helps you clearly identify very quickly where that issue was, and then you can dig in deeper to understand where the failure occurred and work to rectify that. Many times we've seen issues in the past with some of those VDI style solutions, running through a deployment process. It's a script that might have 30 different steps associated with it, but trying to understand where that failure actually occurred and how best to mitigate that can be a challenge. So having an easy mechanism like this, including what can often be recommended remediation or troubleshooting steps involved to help you address any of those challenges that might have come up, this makes the whole process a whole lot easier. As you can see here on the screen, we have both our Azure AD Join and our hybrid. Our hybrid is a longer list of tasks just because we are tying back into our traditional Active Directory environment. So there are going to be more components that we need to take into consideration. Regardless, this gives us a very clear view of what's actually going through as part of the provision process and helps us, again, identify if there are any challenges that occur. Creating provisioning policies. So again, this is going to be through our Endpoint Manager portal or Admin Center. We're going to go through, click on the Provisioning Policies tab, create the policy, give it a name, specify, you know, how we want to join, whether we're doing Azure AD or hybrid. Select our Windows image, again, either gallery if we're in the business model or if we don't have a requirement for custom images, or we could do custom as required. Select our configuration settings and then do our group assignment. It is nice to be able to assign things to a group rather than individual users, as it does cut down on administration and makes life a whole lot easier. While we do support custom images, as noted sort of at the bottom of the slide here, there is a recommendation for looking at best practices. The recommendation would be to leverage a Microsoft Gallery image where possible, and then publish all of your line of business applications through Endpoint Manager. The benefit here is it allows you to maintain just a single image. It's based off of Microsoft Gallery, so there's no modifications or things required to keep that image up to date. And it gives you a lot more flexibility on how you publish applications, because you can now publish application based off of group assignment and such. So rather than having it all baked into the gold image and maybe having to maintain multiple gold images for different departments or teams, such, leveraging Endpoint Manager to publish your applications streamlines and makes the process a whole lot easier and helps ensure that you only ever need to do things once and not maintain multiple instances of things. When we talk about Cloud PC Gallery images, so Microsoft does provide a number of images that can be leveraged as the foundation for your Windows 365 Cloud PC. As you can see in the image, so we do have both Windows 10 and 11 desktops available to us. We have images that have the Microsoft 365 applications already baked in, which makes that a whole lot easier because it's something we're typically going to be installing anyways. We also have images that have varying optimizations built into them. So this allows us to ensure that the image that we select that uses the foundation for our Cloud PC is designed with all of the optimizations and the tweaks necessary to make it a successful Cloud PC. And again, these are the types of challenges that we don't necessarily want to deal with custom images if we can avoid. However, we recognize that with some customers, a custom image is really the only way to go. And so we'll need to go through and add some of those optimizations ourselves. Custom images, if that is a requirement and something that you choose to move forward with, it is relatively straightforward to add. So with an Endpoint Manager, we're just going to be injecting or uploading that image to Endpoint Manager. We need to give it a name, a version, and identify what that source image is. Once we've done that, we can then use that custom image, to create our Windows 365 Cloud PCs. One of the nice things is Microsoft does provide global replication of images to different data center regions. So if you are supporting users across multiple geographies and you have a custom image that you want to use, Microsoft will replicate that in the back end for you. So that's available in each of those different geographies as you go to spin up Windows 365 Cloud PCs in those specific regions. Now I'm going to go through a quick demo here of provisioning Cloud PCs. This is going to be specific to Azure AD Join, not going through the additional steps of the hybrid Azure AD Join component. So for creating our policy here, so we are in the Endpoint Manager Admin Center. We're going to want to add a new policy. We're going to want to provide that policy a name. You can see down under the join details, we can select either Azure AD Join or hybrid. As noted in this particular example, we're going to take Azure AD Join. We're going to need to specify our network. So because we're just Azure AD Join, there's no private or personal networks we need to manage. And then our region. So as you might have seen in this example, our name is Amsterdam. So we're building it in West Europe. So that's the region we're going to pick for these particular Windows Cloud PCs. image type, we can select gallery or custom. In this case, we're going to select gallery, and we're going to take advantage of the Windows 11 Enterprise with apps embedded. Language and region, and this is something that's relatively new. Again, in this particular example, we're looking at Amsterdam, so we're going to pick Dutch as our language. We're going to specify a group that we want to assign these desktops to. So we're somewhere here, we go, Cloud PC users, and then we're done. So as we add users to that group, Windows 11 desktops are going to get provisioned for them based off of those policies. So based off of the geography and the language settings and such that we define. So any user that gets added to that Cloud PC's group is going to start having that desktop auto provision for them, assuming they are licensed appropriately. That'll happen with all the settings that we applied from a language and region perspective. And user experience. So as noted, for SMB users, actually for any users, I think even enterprise can use this. We do have the ability to log into the Windows 365 portal from an end user perspective. So administration is in the enterprise SKU is managed to endpoint manager. But from an end user perspective, you might be on a machine where you don't necessarily have the client software available to you. Logging into Windows365.microsoft.com allows you to launch an in-browser instance of your desktop. So if you happen to be working on a kiosk machine or in-laws or whatever the case may be, even without that, the remote desktop client software installed, you can still easily access your desktop. The other thing you can do from the portal is a couple self-service capabilities. So things like rebooting your workspace or renaming your desktop or troubleshooting your connection. And so again, the intent is to empower users to manage basic troubleshooting tasks themselves where possible to hopefully reduce the burden on your internal help desk to handle some of these basic tasks. So it makes it easier for the user, especially if they happen to be working off business hours, to do some basic troubleshooting themselves, hopefully get themselves back into a state where they're functional. And if not, at least from an IT perspective, we know we've covered the basics and we can delve into a little more of what's happening behind the scenes. End user experience demo. So again, this is the same site that we just spoke about. So you can see as a user logs in, they get their welcome screen. They get the option there to download the remote desktop software. So this is the full-blown client component that they can use to launch their Windows PC rather than running it through a browser. We can see the cloud PCs that are assigned to us. So for Adele Vance, we can see that she has a cloud PC that is based on Windows 11. It has two virtual CPU cores, 8 gigs of memory, and 128 gigs of storage. So with Adele being logged in, it's simply just a matter of opening in browser. It's going to open up a separate session. It's going to validate what you want to make available, whether speaker or microphone, clip, printer. You can decide whether or not that you want those made available to your virtual session. And then once you've selected that and log in, you're presented with your Windows 11 desktop. From an administrative perspective, if you don't want users to be able to access local printers or resources and such, you can build policies to disallow that from being an option presented to the user. So if you want to basically sandbox this environment or restrict any access to local devices, we do have the ability to do that. My apps integration. So some of you may be aware, so we do have a website called myapplications.microsoft.com. This provides an easy landing page for all the applications that are relevant to you. It also allows you to group or create collections of applications that might be relevant or more commonly accessed. Windows 365 does show up as an option within the My Applications site. So you do have the ability to have that added to a collection to make it a little bit easier, because there might be times you don't need a full desktop. You just need to launch Word or Outlook. Maybe you need to bounce back and forth. It's just an easy mechanism for you to be able to manage that transition and have all of your virtual desktops, or sorry, cloud PCs and applications available in a common portal. And for client features, so as noted, Windows 365 supports a wide range of clients, right? Whether it's a Windows desktop, whether it's a Mac OS, Android, iOS, or even Linux devices and such through the web portal, we have a wide range of different client types that we can support. There's going to be varying levels of features that are going to be available based off of the type of client that we're trying to use. The Windows desktop or full client installer is what's going to give us the most capabilities, but we can clearly see what's available to us based off of what sort of client operating system we're working from. I will say this is something that continues to evolve over time. Microsoft is working to continue to add more and more features and functionality to some of the other non-Windows desktop scenarios. So this chart will continue to evolve over time, but it gives a good snapshot of what's sort of available based off of what that device you're sitting in front of. from a security stance. So Windows 365 is built on zero trust principles, same as pretty much everything Microsoft does nowadays. We look at cloud value. So the fact that these machines are always on means that we have reliable patching, right? So I'm sure many of us from an IT perspective have dealt with, we have our monthly patches we're trying to get out, trying to access users' PCs that might be offline or off completely and in a bag somewhere, can be a challenge to keep those up to date. The nice thing is because these are on 24/7 and always accessible and always in the cloud, it makes it very easy for us to manage patching. We have intelligent access control and real-time monitoring and mitigation activities or remediation activities help us reduce threat exposure. Because we have specifically with the enterprise SKUs, where we have endpoint analytics and insights and such, we can very clearly see what's actually happening and ideally identify whether there are some challenges from a user perspective or whatever the case may be, and then work to mitigate that or address that as quickly as possible. Protection against data leakage. As I mentioned last slide, if you want, you can sandbox the environment, right? If you have concerns about sensitive data potentially leaving your organization, leveraging a solution like Windows 365 can be fantastic because you can entirely isolate that environment. You can ensure that users cannot access local drives or USB or printers or anything else, that they log into their Windows 365 desktop and everything they do is within the desktop itself, and there's no ability to actually export data out to the physical device they're sitting in front of. This can be great for both ensuring, you know, that there's no risk or reducing risk from employees, as well as contractors or other third-party resources that we need to give access to our environment for specific tasks or to handle specific operations and such. We don't necessarily want to assign them a physical device, especially if they're maybe in another part of the world. That can often be challenging. So providing a Windows 365-based desktop that they can log into gives them access to whatever you need them to be able to do without having to worry about that data leakage. Bring your own PC or BYO PC, same idea. Because we have the ability to sandbox this environment and lock it down so that there's no access to the local device, we no longer care what that endpoint looks like, right? If we're allowing people to bring in personal devices, maybe it is something that's kept up to date and very pristine, which is great. Maybe it's something that's a couple years out of date, or maybe the employee has teenage children who do God knows what with the device. All of these things can become security risks. And same with antivirus and such, right? These are all things that we typically worry about when we allow users to bring their own PC into the workplace. But it looks like Windows 365, it opens up the door to that possibility without exposing us to a bunch of risk. Because we can isolate the Windows 365 desktop, whatever that end state looks like becomes irrelevant because it's really just a gateway into our corporate desktop that we're providing that user. And then lastly, standard cloud PC users. So users by default don't have administrative rights. So there is the ability to grant elevated privileges for installing applications and such. By default, they're not just local administrators. And so users can't just go and install whatever they want on their cloud PC. There is some measure of control. As you can see, so we are tightly integrated with Microsoft's cloud security stack. From an identity perspective, we're leveraging Azure AD. So again, the same credentials that we're using for Office 365 or Microsoft 365. For some of us who have moved away from Active Directory, it's the same credentials we're using to log into our physical device in front of us as we speak. Security management. So because we're tied to the Endpoint Manager, any of those policies, any of those rules that we've put in place or security measures, they're going to just naturally flow through to Windows 365. So if you've built policies, if you require multi-factor authentication, or you built conditional access policies, or whatever the case may be, all those can still be leveraged just with Windows 365 because they just get treated like another endpoint as part of your corporate networks. And then lastly, from an endpoint security perspective, we have Defender for Endpoint. So again, assuming that is so that might be used as your preferred antivirus solution, that just has a natural extension to push out to Windows 365. And again, treat them as we would any other endpoint. Defender for Endpoint, for those who might not be aware, is Microsoft's next-gen antivirus solution. So it is also an EDR or endpoint detection and response. So it has some intelligence built in. The Microsoft Defender ecosystem, which includes endpoint and Office 365 and cloud apps and a whole bunch of other things, there's a common intelligence behind them where they work together to help mitigate threats across the entire organization. It does give us that threat vulnerability management and proactive capabilities. All that is available, obviously, in Windows 365 because we do just treat it like we would any other PC inside of our corporate environment. Monitoring, analytics, and troubleshooting. So this ties into specifically the endpoint analytics component that we see as part of Endpoint Manager, but it's really we're focused on helping organizations enhance user productivity, reduce the burden on IT, and hopefully improve our total cost of ownership. So with endpoint analytics and insights, we actually get great insights into what's actually happening. We get alerts to understand that there are challenges. We're given proactive recommendations and troubleshooting recommendations to help remediate issues, ideally early on. The last thing we want is for users to call in to complain that Windows 365 sucks, it hasn't been working for weeks, or having all sorts of issues. We typically want to try to mitigate and address issues in advance of that point if we can. So having those insights, having the ability to actually understand what their end user experience is like, understanding whether there's connectivity problems and such, and being able to proactively deal with some of those, again, helps reduce the burden on IT, and it helps improve the overall end user experience. So having that wealth of information can be hugely beneficial. We have flexibility at scale. So again, we can resize based off of needs. We have machine learning, device recommendations behind the scenes. So if we find that a cloud PC is over-provisioned or under-provisioned, the insights or endpoint analytics and insights will give us an information that help us understand that maybe, again, that user is spiking CPU on a fairly regular basis and starting to hit that 100% utilization, right? Again, rather than waiting for the user to call and complain about how slow things are or the challenges they're having, understanding that they are spiky periodically and proactively being able to go in and add additional CPU cores or additional memory to their cloud PC to mitigate that can provide overall benefits. And then lastly, from an IT spend perspective, because we are allowing users some level of autonomy for rebooting their own machines, because we have insights and automation and such behind the scenes, the objective is to, again, you know, take action, to be proactive, to address things while they're still minimally impactful before they become an all-out catastrophe across the business or for a particular subset of our users, where we want to be proactive where possible. This helps us reduce the number of service desk tickets and the amount of time that our service desk and IT teams need to spend to troubleshoot those types of issues. Right-sizing helps us ensure we minimize consumption costs. We don't want a user running a Windows 365 PC with 8 cores and 32 gigs of memory and running along at 10% utilization. We want to make sure that we're right-sizing based off of that user-specific needs, so we're only paying for the resources we actually need to consume. And then lastly, because we have a lot of these insights and analytics built into the product itself, you know, it's eliminating any sort of requirement for third-party analytics software to give us the same sorts of insights. Endpoint analytics. So this is really focused around measuring how the business works and the quality of experience. So, you know, it's designed to help us understand, given what we consider a reasonable benchmark, how are users tracking? How are logging experiences occur? What are logging experiences? Thank God, running out of words. What is the block in duration? Does a user log in 5 or 10 seconds, or is it taking them a minute and a half? What's the round trip time connection between the endpoint and the cloud PC? What sort of failures are we seeing, right? It's giving us those insights to be able to proactively remediate some of these issues before they ideally get raised by the user. And also provide us recommendations around upgrade actions and such. And for those who do note or pay attention to productivity score, endpoint analytics does roll up into that from a recommendations perspective to help ensure that you're scoring the way that you want to for the productivity standpoint. Windows 365 endpoint analytics, we have a couple different categories. Some of these are new, some are specific to Windows 365. Others are just general reports that are available in endpoint analytics that we can take advantage of with Windows 365. Resource performance, so again, identifying those spikes. Remoting connection, so this would be one that's specific to Windows 365. So understanding how long it takes a user to log in, understanding what that streaming quality of connection is like, or that round trip time, to give us a better sense as to whether we're having an issue on the Microsoft side, whether it's an issue on the user side, or maybe it's an issue in the connectivity between the endpoint and the cloud PC and the user itself. Startup performance, again, understanding how long boot time and login time takes for users. Ideally, if we recognize that we have a couple of outliers where maybe users are taking longer than anticipated, we can work to address that, ideally, again, before it becomes a pain point in the user itself. Proactive remediations. So we have automated responses and recommendations to help mitigate some of these common issues that we see. Endpoint analytics will also help us, those organizations that are rolling out things like Windows 11 to the business. Then recommended software helps us understand where we are along that journey and where there might be pain points or troubleshooting things that we need to address in order to help progress that. And then lastly, application health. gives us an understanding of application usage and crashes. Again, hopefully giving us the insights necessary up front to be able to figure out what's happening and address an issue before it becomes a real pain point for users and it bubbles up to the surface and becomes help desk tickets. A couple of reports that we have available, resource performance, again, similar to what we saw in the last slide. So it's going to give us insights into understanding resource allocation, whether they're correct for the individual user based off of how they actually work, monitoring performance, identifying issues and root causes, and being proactive. Remote connection, we talked to again, it's a whole connectivity between the endpoint and the end user and understanding what that means and ensuring it's streamlined as much as possible. Resizing, either upgrading or downgrading cloud PCs based off of user requirements. And then work from anywhere is that without Windows 11 rollouts, your traditional devices and such, where we're getting insights into what's actually happening along your upgrade process, what's been successful, and where we have existing roadblocks that we need to address. Let me run through the last slide like super, super quick, and then I'll answer any outstanding questions. I'm happy to hang out for an extra couple of minutes, but that way for those who need to go, that we can at least get through this. Troubleshooting. So we have a bunch of capabilities built in to help us understand, again, what's happening from an end user perspective. Do you have a help desk operator, a bunch of information. So when a user does call in, we can get great insights into what that is the user is actually experiencing and the challenges that they're having. Help desk, I'm not going to go through it. Quick assist is our mechanism to basically be able to remote into or initiate a remote session with a user, work through with them, troubleshoot their issue, work to get it resolved in a quick and timely fashion and a secure mechanism. A universal print, this is something Microsoft has introduced from an Azure perspective. Universal print, only available for Windows 11 in Windows 365, but makes it very simple for us to assign printers to users and not have to worry about things like print drivers anymore. Work great. Roadmap, yep, I'll blow through this. So this is something that Microsoft will continue to evolve. This is a real area of focus for them. So we're seeing continuous updates to Windows 365. You can see we've got different categories here. We've had a bunch of changes that have been made over the last couple of months, and Microsoft continues to evolve these things over time. We have some upcoming features that are pending. You can see we do have the Windows 365 roadmap in the ak.ms link up in the upper right corner. Microsoft does a good job of reporting or tracking what features they're working on and giving an idea as to when the release date is that's expected. But it's essentially an application in progress, something that Microsoft is very focused on. Lastly, so we talked a lot about Windows 365. As I mentioned to, I think it was Dave earlier, yes, single session or personal desktops doesn't meet your business needs. Microsoft does also have Azure Virtual Desktop, which is a multi-session scenario. Some organizations, that might be a better solution for them as it gives a higher level of control. Thank you all for your patience, hanging out an extra couple of minutes. A lot of content on a really exciting topic. So I appreciate you guys spending some time with us today. And I hope that you found this session useful. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of What the Tech, brought to you by ProServe IT. We hope you've gained valuable insights into Windows 365 and how it can transform your organization's infrastructure. In our next and final episode of this infrastructure series, we'll provide a comprehensive overview of Azure's latest developments and how they can optimize your infrastructure. Until then, remember that the world of tech is always evolving, and we're here to help you stay ahead of the curve. Goodbye for now, and we'll meet you in the next episode of What the Tech.